The topic for this talk is grief, and maybe the talk can be titled Liberating Grief. And what motivates this talk is, in big part, is that the one-year anniversary of many of us going into sheltering in place, and the dramatic way in which our whole world has, much of the world, as 99% of it, has been turned upside down or inside out or radically changed by the pandemic. And in marking this one-year anniversary, it feels important to acknowledge and make room for and bring forth the grief that has been part of this year. And that grief is not something that should be shied away from or be embarrassed about, but is actually a very important part of human beings and our human life, and it should be acknowledged, it should be understood and seen. And what's significant, I think, for many of us recognize is that the griefs of the last year have been wide-ranging. I mean, certainly there are, some of them are huge. I mean, many around the world, millions of people have died. In the United States, well over 500,000 people have died directly from the disease, from the illness. And then there's been many who have been seriously sick. And some with the long-termers, like long-haul people, people who, their symptoms that continue for months and months, and maybe it'll be for years. And so there's a grief of the loss of so many things, loss of people, loss of family members, friends, from death and sickness. And then there's the grief of just loss of connections, of people we've been regularly connected to, are sheltering in place themselves, and there's not much communication, and the grief of not being social in the same way we were before. There's all these small griefs that goes along we experience of all the things we can't do or that we're used to doing and that we value doing, and all the small ways in which we've gotten energized and inspired about life and ready to go out and do it are not available. And some people find there's a slow, steady attrition of energy, of inspiration, of motivation, partly from the slow kind of drip by dripping of little griefs and sorrows and sadnesses that go on. And then there's the things that happen in our society, the challenges, the griefs, the sorrow, the sadness about politics and about racial injustice and economic injustice. Nowadays, you know, we're aware of medical injustice and environmental injustice. And violence and hatred, the violence against Asian Americans is heartbreaking. The violence against Black Americans is heartbreaking. And the hatred that exists in our society, that people go around shooting each other. So all these things together, are forms of sadness and grief that kind of accumulate, or can accumulate, if they're not acknowledged, and not known, and not liberated. So there's three ways of being with grief. There's accompanying grief, there is knowing grief, and there's liberating grief. And what I like about these words, accompanying, knowing, and liberating, that grammatically, they can both be a verb and an adjective. So knowing, accompanying grief means we are the companions of it. We bring ourselves to be present for it and be with it. But it's the grief that does the accompanying. It's a grief, accompanying grief can also be the grief that accompanies us. And it's a mutual relationship, you and your grief. And to feel and experience that mutuality is really, really to allow the accompanying to be full. There is a knowing grief where we can know it, But there's also the grief that knows something. Grief is not just ignorant or dumb or, you know, uninformed. Grief is something that's really well informed about something very important. And what is it that grief knows? And so when we know grief, we're also learning, what does grief know? And then liberating grief is both, you know, we can liberate the grief perhaps, but also there's the idea that there's a grief that is liberating. And how can, you know, something as painful and difficult as grief can be at times, how can that be liberating as well? And to even to say those words or suggest that idea can feel like a betrayal or to the grief we have, or can feel like an insult to the degree of pain we can experience the grief. So grief, such an important topic for us. And I had this in mind that we could somehow do this talk together, that not just me talking, but maybe with those of you who have access to the chat, we can have a little bit do this as in teamwork. So accompanying grief. Grief is an ordinary part of human beings' lives. It's to be expected that we'll have grief. It's not a mistake to have grief. If we're living and paying attention and caring about life and caring about things, there'll be grief, there'll be sorrow, there'll be sadness. And so to spend time with that and allow ourselves to feel it, to trust it, to be with it. People who do mindfulness practices can really maybe appreciate this, how valuable it is to be with something, be with all this. Partly because we start feeling that to not be with it is to not be with ourselves. That as we learn to be really present for our experience, present in ourselves, and being opening up to all of who we are, there's a feeling of coming home to ourselves, or feeling whole in ourselves, complete in ourselves, or no part left out. And it's in doing so, we become a refuge to ourselves. We become a refuge, a place of support, a place of freedom, a place of being. We're allowed to be full and complete. And as soon as we have something like grief that's too painful for us, or too embarrassing for us, or too something we want to push away or ignore or repress, then we are dividing ourselves. We're no longer whole. We're no longer able to come back into our hearts and feel at home there. And so to accompany ourselves, accompany the grief, is a means to kind of learn to stay whole, learn to stay complete, or learn to be a refuge to ourselves, no matter how big and strong the pain is. There's good reason why people want to avoid grief, and that is because it can be painful. Acute grief, you know, is searing. Is, you know, it's just like everything is torn apart, and the world, the fabric of the world, is torn apart, and it can be excruciating to feel some griefs. So it's very painful. And so the idea of accompanying grief is to accompany our pain. And if we don't do that, then the grief and the pain remains, but maybe it goes underground. It gets repressed or gets kind of ignored. But it still operates. It's still there, festering. And it's there. If it hasn't really been dealt with fully or with dignity or nobility, then it can come back in unexpected and maybe unhealthy ways in terms of anger or excessive fear or or being too closed and numb from what's going on. So to accompany all this is to accompany the ways we go numb, to accompany also the ways we get angry, the ways we feel helpless and hopeless, to just accompany ourselves in the pain. So I did that this last week to some degree. For me personally, it was a very touching experience, time for me, where I moved my mother into a memory care home, and I think the most poignant part of it was walking across the parking lot of the memory care place to bring her to the door, and because of COVID, we can't come in. Someone comes out and receives her and accompanies her in, where I stay behind. So here I was walking across the parking lot, very acutely aware of what was painful for me over 60 years ago. And that was one of the earliest memories I have of my mother, was her accompanying me when I was about 4 years old across a school playground. I was holding her hand and I was crying because I was going to the first day of school in a foreign country in a language I didn't speak, in Geneva, where they spoke French and I didn't speak French, and going to a Catholic, best of my memory, kindergarten maybe, something like that, that was run by nuns. And I was, she was walking me across, I was holding my hand and I was crying. And now over 60 years later, the roles were reversed, and her memory was not such that she quite understood what was going on, but I did. And so that came back. And I made space for it. And then after I took her there, I went for a long walk in the hills around here just to accompany my grief, accompany my sadness of what was going on. And it was kind of the richness of it partly was the leftover of a certain pain, it's the memory of the pain from over 60 years ago, that speaks to a principle that sometimes our griefs, our previous griefs, and even more so if the griefs are unresolved or somehow have been pushed down or ignored, they get reawakened with new griefs. And so the new griefs can be much more acute because of how it can be the legacy of griefs that we've had. So to accompany grief is to accompany pain. And for people who do mindfulness practice, we begin discovering that there's a difference between pain and suffering. And this makes a world of difference. And this is really what the heart of Buddhist practice is about, if we can see that difference, then we can maybe learn to let go of the suffering and then learn to, with nobility, with compassion, accompany the pain that's part of human life. The suffering is when we contract around the pain, when we close the heart around the pain, when we cover over the pain, when we resist the pain, when we're afraid of the pain. All these other ways that we contract and get wrapped up in it is the suffering. But the pain doesn't, you know, and that's what we're liberating in Buddhist practice, all that kind of complicated reactivity to the pain. And but just to live with the pain and make space for it, be open to it, be a refuge for the pain, help the pain feel safe in us, and to learn that art, to learn that ability to accompany our pain. So it begins by, you know, recognizing what the pain is, naming it, so that we can see what's been going on and what's been happening. And so for this pandemic and marking this anniversary, there's been big things to grieve and small things to grieve and all these teeny incidental things that some people say shouldn't count. You know, I should be not up to handling that and dealing with that. But the accumulation of all these small little things and that have been challenging and losses over this year, they add up to a lot. And one of the lessons of grief is never discount any grief. Never feel that because other people's grief is so much bigger, mine shouldn't count. Every grief counts. Every grief is something to accompany, to know, and to liberate. Because if we don't do that, then slowly, incrementally, we begin closing down or pushing under, and the vitality, the fullness of being here, is going to be diminished. So if you're willing, maybe if you could write, some of you would be willing to write in the chat, maybe one or two or three words or whatever you want, of what you have grieved this last year that has to do with this pandemic. And it'd be nice to have some names associated, not necessarily to people, but to these different kinds of griefs named here. And so what have you grieved over this last year? Grieving hugs, lost hugs, the absence of intimacy and physical contact with people, not seeing a grandson. Going to school and seeing my friends. Not being able to see my parents. Death of 20 clients. Loss of relationships. I can't read them all, but community. Lost and distorted social connections, sad. Many past griefs have resurfaced. Being in class with my students. Isolation, nourishing human touch, family visits. Not being with grandchildren, loss of grandmother. Sitting in community, connecting with many friends. Aunt dying, high school son's loss of his senior year. Yeah, no hugs. Loss of the world and freedom as it was. Being alone so much. Missed celebrations, loss of sense of safety. Our cat died this year. After 15 years as our companion. Yeah, loss of pets can be huge, huge grief. Loss of closest friend also. Not being in Sangha with distant relatives, I think. Moments even of freedom from fear. Not attending to a dear friend's father's funeral. Illness, isolation, political corruption, PTSD, isolation. Dad's funeral. Yeah, it's a big thing. I've not seen my daughter and grandchildren for more than a year. Loss of truth and compassion from leadership. Music jams. Lost my ability to understand my loved ones. Changing friendships. So, thank you all for writing all those things. It's a big deal. So these are the things to accompany. These are the things to name and to be with. And sometimes it's helpful to have help, support, and accompaniment. That's what, sometimes having friends you can talk to about the griefs we have. And not to fix, not to solve, but just to help to have a companionship in the grief. And some griefs are so difficult to be our own companion to that having someone else who can support us in that process. There are like grief counselors, for example, and they're useful in many ways, but one way is that they know how to be companions and accompany and be present for. And so it's easier for us to be our own companions for our grief, because we have someone who really knows how to do it and can do it with care and compassion and acceptance. And then learning how to be comfortable, if that's the right word, with feeling pain. Learning how to be open to feeling pain. Learning the wisdom of being with pain. The more we love something that we've lost, the more we love something that we lost, that love doesn't go away. And that something is precious. What is to really kind of listen deeply, get to know deeply what's going on here, And that's a second step of this three-step process, knowing grief, really getting to know what is this grief, what is this pain, being willing to really attend to it. Because there's a tendency sometimes when we're in really some situation, we're in a lot of pain and hurt and feeling of betrayal, to get angry and push things away and be hostile or something, and which is natural enough. It's a way of avoiding sometimes the pain. But to really get to know the pain, because the degree to which we love something, to that degree, our beautiful capacity for love, our beautiful capacity for something good, is there buried in the pain, is found together with the pain. Pain isn't all necessarily all bad. And so to really get to know grief and know pain, to know that part of the grief, that kind of that suffering, as opposed to pain, to be able to make that distinction between the contractions we have and the resistance, the shoulds and the shouldn'ts. I shouldn't be feeling grief. I should be over it by now. I'm supposed to go through grief perfectly. I'm supposed to resolve my grief. I'm supposed to heal my grief. I don't know if we're supposed to heal grief, or some people heal grief, but I don't know if we're supposed to or required always, or we're supposed to resolve grief. Some of us never healed in a sense that the pain never goes away. But we can make more space for it. It's part of our deep humanity to feel the pain of living life. Freedom, real freedom, it can coexist with pain. Freedom does not coexist with suffering. Suffering is the loss of freedom. And so to keep opening the heart and allow it to be broken, allow it to have space for the pain that we feel, is part of it. And sometimes grief can be so strong that any words about it, like the words I'm doing today, can feel just impossible and too difficult to listen to and doesn't make any sense. Occasionally grief has to go, we have to reach rock bottom for something to finally give out, or it just seems like so impossible. And so to really accompany, really know how impossible it is, and stay there with it, is part of at least what this mindfulness practice teaches. To be with pain, to be with it all. And I'm just remembering some of the things that I was thinking about. We grieve. I've grieved in my life. I've grieved anticipated futures. The future, the now that won't happen because my friend died. We grieve what happened in the past. We grieve what didn't happen in the past. What should have happened in the past. So all these, you know, it's layers and layers of grief that we can feel. So this knowing grief in Vipassana practice has a lot to do with the direct experience in the moment, which is to feel it in your body. What is the manifestation of grief here and now in the body? What parts of the body are touched and moved and ache with grief? And we can find and identify how it is physically here and now. Then that becomes a place, the very location, where we begin opening up to it, where we open the heart, we open the mind, we open attention, and make see how big the awareness could be, so we can hold that place and be with it. If it's not located sometimes in the body, it just seems like it's just overwhelming. But sometimes when we locate in the body, it has a kind of locus, it has a kind of location to be close with or intimate with or to touch or to connect to. So maybe here in the chat again, would some of you be willing to write where in the body do you experience grief? Some of the locations and places for that. Or wonderful bodies that carry so much. I have difficulty swallowing. Stomach and chest digestion, mostly in heart, upper chest, throat, right below the heart. My face, throat, chest, tightening on my chest. My heart aches, heart and lungs. My heart area in my chest, upper chest and throat, right behind the sternum. Throat, throat, absolutely in the chest and throat. Eyes and forehead, breath, in the smile, less easy to turn up the angle up. Around my eyes, I squint a lot. Torso, upper neck, hot teary eyes, tightness of belly, broken heart, in the chest and heart like a vacuum in my heart. Breath tightens, tightness in the brain, jaw tightens, shoulders. So thank you for all that. Headache from angry thoughts, brain. Core of my being, center of my body. Water flowing out, yeah. Lots of tears. Headache, lower back, in the voice. Yeah, so many ways it manifests in the body, darkness in the head and the entire being. So these are the places that we bring our compassion and care. These are the places we hold. These are the places where you want to bring a sense of safety to, in the pit of my stomach. Mindfulness is to bring a sense of safety to these places in the body that ache and hurt and are contracted and tight. And there's a way in which to trust that, to trust feeling it and sensing it and being with it. It can be very, very hard. One of the things that makes grief particularly difficult is when we feel helpless or hopeless with the grief. The sense of helplessness for some people, especially if it's chronic, is really debilitating. And the ability to accompany and to know and to feel and connect and to make space for and to hold in the body is a way that starts overcoming this feeling of helplessness. We can help ourselves. There is hope for ourselves. Through this practice of mindfulness, we have something we can do. It might be helpless in terms of for those who are dead or gone or losses we have for them to come back, but it doesn't leave us as a helpless person. We can engage with agency, with sense of purpose, and it's a profound thing, very profound, to learn the ability to hold our pain and not to add layers of suffering on top of it. There's no shame in adding suffering on top of our pain, because sometimes what we need to accompany, what we need to open to, is a clear seeing, knowing, and experiencing of those layers of reactivity we have. And without that, we don't have a hope of really experiencing what Charlie Brown called, I think he called, we have good grief. Good grief is the grief that is simple, is unentangled. We don't have all these layers of shoulds and shouldn'ts on top of it. It should be different. We should be over it by now. Or I don't deserve to be grieving because other people's grief so much more. All these things we do. And then finally, there's liberating grief. And this is kind of what I'm saying all along, is liberating the grief, not from getting rid of the grief, not from no longer having grief, but liberating it from how the grief, all the suffering on top of the grief, all the reactivity, all the judgments, all the angers, all the pushing away, the resistance, all the ways in which we divide ourselves by shutting out part of who we are because it's too painful to be with. To liberate is to become whole. liberate is no part left out. All of who we are is allowed to be there. Not because we are justifying it or celebrating it or condoning it necessarily, but so that we can open up and have it all be part of the whole. The whole is always greater than the parts, and grief is one of the parts. It can feel like it's the whole thing when it's really intense, but it's always a part of the whole. And to make room for it and to hold it and be with it, it might mean that the liberated person might cry because the pure simplicity of the pain brings along tears. Tears are not a sign of being unliberated. They might be a sign of actually we're beginning to liberate ourselves. That's where the liberation happens. I love the idea, I love the ways in which it's possible to cry in meditation, because there's something about the meditation posture where it's a posture in which we never collapse, we never sink, we never give up, we never succumb to it, but we stay simple, relaxed, if you're upright, and let the tears flow. So there's not the self-pity or the giving up or something. And there's freedom in just crying. There's freedom. There's liberation found in that sometimes. So liberating our grief without needing it to go away, so that we can go through our life continuing to experience the griefs that will come. There's no final freedom from grief and sadness. But to go through life and be free in the midst of it is to allow ourselves to feel it, the vitality, the fullness of life, with the grief and with the joys and with the love and with all that's here. And this is not resolving grief in terms of it going away. It's not finally it's over. It's the grief has its own life. And so liberating our grief is to be generous to our grief so the grief can have its freedom. The grief can do what it needs to do. And to learn to trust the heart knows what to do. The heart knows what to do with grief if we've liberated it, if we know it, accompany it, and we get out of its way and we've liberated from ourselves. Our hearts, our grief knows what to do. And sometimes we have to be patient. It takes time. So liberating our grief. So some of you maybe have had some experience of grief liberated in the way I've talked about here. And how does it feel? How do you know that grief has been liberated? How do you know? How's that experienced in you? How's it experienced in your body? What's it like to have grief maybe even still present, but really feel it's been liberated? So, let's see. Here, there can be a purity to the feeling of grief and strong emotion. Maybe that's part of the liberation. Yes. And part of what it feels like for me is a willingness. The liberation of grief comes along with a willingness to grieve, a willingness to have pain. Breaking away and lifting of weight. I feel like I'm cared and safe. When I let it go, I felt more here and connected to others, compassion sense in grief, emerging sense of peace, feeling joy along with the sorrow, getting in touch with the raw emotion and being with it. Forgiveness, there's truth in the deep sorrow and grief. Lifted weight of grief, more love and accompanying grief, relaxation and gratitude, I feel lighter. It feels cleansing, forgiveness, more peace and openness. acceptance of experience, at peace with it, putting down a large rock. Grief from childhood became compassion for my parents. Heart opens and I cry more with the connection. Grief is a necessary part of moving on from the loss. Feeling the joy right next to it. Great, thank you for all this very much. Feeling the love behind and inside of grief and feeling grateful for such love. Feel like I'm moving again. Relief. The heart knows what to do with grief when it has been liberated. I will always carry this incredibly wise statement. Thank you. Oh, it's a quote quoting. So, thank you. So, accompanying our grief, knowing grief, and liberating grief. Three different ways of being with grief at different times, different ones. One of them are appropriate. And it's a profound part of our human life, and it's been an important part, I don't know if important is the right word, a very significant part of this last year. And as we begin the second year of COVID, with whatever changes might be coming, to acknowledge a little bit what happened this last year and to have spent time really accompanying, knowing, and liberating this grief, hopefully will let us go into this new world, this new year, more capable, more willing, more wise in how to continue to meet the griefs that will come. One way or the other, we'll still have griefs. Even when the pandemic's over, we'll have griefs. This is part of human life, and there's no liberation without being liberated in relationship to our grief as well. We are grieving beings just as much as we're loving beings, compassionate beings, forgiving beings. We're also beings that can experience pain. So, thank you very much for this, and I'm aware that grief is a huge well, abyss of pain sometimes, very difficult, and bringing it up today and evoking it this way might be very hard for some of you. And I'd encourage you to spend some time today caring for yourself if that's the case. Maybe talk to friends, go for walks. If you have no one to talk to, journal about it. Write about it so you give it some expression, but do take care of yourself if this talk was particularly difficult, maybe in a few days listen to it again. There might be something moving and bubbling inside of you from it. But I wish you well, and I offer you this talk with a lot of desire and care and compassion for your welfare and happiness and for all of us as we go forward together in this new next year, that may all of us support each other in this process. Thank you all very much.